This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to savor the spirit of Jazz Fest in Brazil, hear about an unexpected silver lining for a major art center, or step into the forest for a magical evening of art and nature, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Jazz Fest may be over, but its spirit lingers, particularly in Brazil, which has felt its influences for more than two decades. That's how long Edgard Redesca and Herbert Lucas have been coming to the fest. This pair of Sao Paulo nightclub entrepreneurs has been working together so long, they can start and finish each other's sentences, and as you'll hear, they often do.
First festival was 1990. We came here for the Jazz Fest. And since then, every year but one.
That's Edgard Redesca. He owns a well-known nightclub in Sao Paulo, a city of 18 million, called the Bourbon Street Music Club. He began it with his late brother-in-law, Luis Mascaro, who had come to New Orleans, fallen in love with the music, and decided he wanted to open a club. It was a time when the Brazilian economy was in great shape. But then it changed, and all their funds were frozen.
So we have no money to continue, but we started to build the place. One break here, one break there. And we took 4 long years to finish the construction. After we decided to start, I came here with Luis, and we walked all over New Orleans. We talked to a lot of people, a lot of musicians. We took hundreds of pictures to help build the club, the architecture. So if you go there, you feel like New Orleans.
Over the two decades he's been visiting the fest, Edgard has brought more than 300 New Orleans musicians to play in Brazil. Then Edgard and the club's artistic director, Herbert Lucas, branched out into their own festival production. For Herbert, the New Orleans Jazz Fest is like a music supermarket. He says their reputation for quality entertainment is now so great, thousands attend their festivals.
So people go to our festivals in at least three different cities. Sometimes we take other acts to other cities in Brazil, especially Sao Paulo, Rio, and Brasilia. But they go without knowing the acts. They don't know anybody. And this is good for us. This is great. We are very proud of it.
Bringing New Orleans artists to Brazil is expensive. And sometimes even Edgard wonders why they do it. Here's Herbert's explanation.
It's not easy. It's not easy because to be authentic, you have to bring musicians from here. And you think about a small band with five people. Can you imagine the fee plus all the expenses? It's really expensive. It's not easy at all. So he asks why. He's asking why. Because there is a lot of love involved. And this is, I think, what I should say in Edgar as well.
I think it's a kind of addiction.
It's an addiction born out of comfort with this city and the similarities between their Brazilian and our New Orleans ways of life.
There are many, many similarities. It starts with the people. The people loves music down there in Brazil. But where this comes from? Part of it comes from Africa, because many of the slaves who came here and helped to change the shape of the music that was only European.
Also went to Brazil. So they say some tribes were the same. That's a theory.
That's it. So slaves came from the same tribes with the same traditions. You have the voodoo here. You have their,
the macumba.
The macumba. That's the same traditions. Orisha, the same gods and things like this. You have the food. You have igumbo here. We have their feijoada. All these are originally slaves' food. What?
Soul
the rest.
Soul food.
And besides all this, you have the rhythm. You have the rhythm. But the similarities, coming back to the question, are also in the way people face life. here we feel almost at home. People smile. People are casual. So when the musicians go there, when New Orleanians go there, they feel at home. We feel the same.
So will they be back next year?
Shall we go this year? Because sometimes it's not easy to leave. We have another festival in May, at the end of May. And we should be taking care of that festival. But we are here. And then they said, oh, shall we pass this year? And we never do. And we will never do. We will never do.
For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
As the music continues its travels, we turn now to a journey of a different nature. The legal fallout from BP's 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill has been ongoing. The civil trial makes its way through the courts, and BP is appealing the way claims are paid. That appeal is, by most accounts, based on a change to the claims process that made it easier for more people and institutions to qualify for money. Tina Antolini has the story on what that's meant for a major local museum.
The first thing you think of when you walk into a second-floor gallery in New Orleans Contemporary Arts Center is definitely not oil. It's all brightly colored masks and costumes on display here for an exhibition about disguises. Center Director Jay Weigel is giving me the highlights.
Here we have a traditional ethnic costume, and then how the Mardi Gras Indians in New Orleans developed.
There was never a visible oil slick in here, of course, in the wake of the 2010 oil spill. And back when the Gulf Coast Claims Facility was handling the claims process, they didn't seem to see much connection between the spill and an arts center.
We were turned down, so the CAC was determined not to be worthy of any kind of compensation.
That's changed, thanks in part to a massive class action lawsuit that was settled with BP a year ago. It created a new claims process that's producing very different results from the GCCF's. The Contemporary Arts Center story reveals part of the messy trail the oil spill has left through the Gulf Coast economy. When the spill hit, the CAC hit a rough patch.
We found ourselves slowly sinking further and further into debt. We were reaching a critical point.
So when Weigel heard about the new claims process, he decided to try again. The CAC hired Zachary Wool, a lawyer with Berrios, Kingsdorf, and Castex.
First, there's the question of, was your loss caused by the spill? That has now been replaced with this objective formula based on gross revenue. And you either meet that test or you don't.
The CAC passed that test because anything having to do with tourism in downtown New Orleans is covered. Their losses are assumed to be caused by the oil spill. Next, they have to figure out what's owed. An organization can choose any 3 to 8 month window in 2010 and compare that to the same month's pre-spill to determine lost revenue. And that turns out to be a generous way of doing the math for nonprofits.
Most businesses have an uneven cash flow, and that's especially true for nonprofits because they usually receive the bulk of their money in large donations, and those come at different times of the year.
Jay Weigel at the CAC wouldn't tell me the exact amount they received for their claim, but he did say it was enough to cover all of the center's operational debt, more than $600,000.
I was like, jeez, it was my darn deficit.
Now, several hundred thousand dollars may seem like a shockingly large number. And that flexible formula may seem like it allows organizations to end up receiving more than they're due. But it's more complicated than that. Blaine Lassin is a professor at Loyola College of Law. He says arts nonprofits have legitimate claims.
Private individuals who were in businesses that were affected by the spill gave less. Governmental revenues from sales taxes may have diminished so that if they were the beneficiary of governmental donations, they would have suffered.
And Lassin says, even if an organization did end up being able to capitalize on the claims process by choosing the right months for the formula to look at, there's no reason they can't. That's the formula that BP agreed to.
And that's typical of many large-scale settlements. You're going to have claimants that may not have actually suffered the losses that the original conduct allegedly caused. But in order to buy peace, the defendant decides to you know, provide a formula that may encompass from time to time those persons who weren't actually injured.
Ann Lassen says an arts nonprofit filing a large claim is not depriving anyone else, a fisherman, say, or a seafood processor, of their due. That's because BP agreed to a settlement with no cap.
I thought they would have sticker shock when they got the final bill. And now they're starting to see this is going to cost them a lot more than they projected.
And he says that's likely the main reason BP is appealing the formula they agreed to. A judge has denied their appeal 3 times, and the Fifth Circuit is expected to weigh in soon. In the meantime, other nonprofits have followed the CAC's example and filed claims. The Louisiana Cultural Economy Foundation is holding workshops around the state on how to go about it. Jay Weigel says the BP money could transform nonprofits across the region, as it's already changed the CAC.
It allows us now to move forward and do work that will create a deeper impact in the unique way that the arts have for a community. So then you make a healthier community. And that's a lovely place to be thinking as opposed to, you know, the electric bill's due in 3 days, Jay. What are you going to do?
It's an odd silver lining that the CAC never would have predicted. Just one example of the way that 3 years out, the economic ripples from the oil spill are still forming. For WWNO, I'm Tina Antolini.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Are you ready to take a trek into the woods? Nothing spooky, no Lugaroo, just a magical celebration of art and nature in a unique environment. We're going to the lower coast of Algiers, to a studio in the woods, and our guides are managing director Aimee Rogan and dance artist Monique Moss. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
New Orleanians know how to throw a party. Tell me about this unique environment and how it came to host this celebration you call Forestival.
Yes, it's Forestival, and it is a celebration of art and nature at a studio in the woods. And that's right, we're in what's known as Lower Coast Algiers. We're on almost 8 acres of what is called bottomland hardwood forest. It's an indigenous forest along the river coast there. It's part of the wetland system. And we are a place for artists and students of all ages to come and be inspired by the woods and to create art. And we're also a preserve. We actively take steps to preserve our forest, and we have an on-site botanist, David Baker, who cares for our woods. And we started as a dream, beginning with our founders, Joe and Lucy Ann Carmichael, who bought that property over 40 years ago and were artists themselves, and over the years decided they wanted to turn that place into someplace ongoing for the community and for the arts. In 2001, we formed a studio in the woods, and that was our beginning. So we've been serving artists for over 10 years of all disciplines who come and are in retreat and make work.
This is a program now of Tulane University?
That's right. In 2004, we became a part of Tulane University, so we're excited to expand what they do and use the resources of the university and to reach out even deeper into the community.
Wow. Now, tell me, what can we expect this year? This is the 4th annual celebration.
I know. It's exciting that we keep going year after year. And every year, I feel, gets better and better. We have a wonderful lineup of music. The Triple B's Berman Brass Band. We partner with Martin Berman Arts Charter School in Algiers. Those kids come out to our site in a variety of ways, but we're excited to have them perform for Forestival. We have a former resident, local jazz vocalist, Sarah Quintana, who was actually a resident artist earlier this year, part of our water residencies, and she'll be doing some exciting experimental work that she did in residence, playing with water. And she has just a beautiful voice and very playful and entertaining show. And then we're finishing up with Sun Pie and the Louisiana Sunspots. We have all kinds of kids' activities. We have an ongoing, very popular Go Into the Clay Studio. Kids and adults all get involved and do an ongoing massive clay project with clay artist, former resident Jane Hill. We also have former resident Nina Nichols, who's a puppet maker, among other talents. She's made a very large inflatable cuttlefish puppet, and that will be second-lined throughout the property. And then, of course, we have Monique Moss reprising a piece that she choreographed in residence with some students called Katrina Cranes.
Yeah. Monique, can you tell us about Katrina Cranes?
I really appreciate the opportunity to reprise the piece. It was created in 2006 when I was a resident at a studio in the woods as an artist teacher with the Nordnoba Center for Dance. It was really important to me at that moment in time to reach my students and give them the opportunity to express some of the angst or grief that was engulfing everyone in New Orleans at the time. And so my focus became allowing the students, the children, a moment to both document their stories and their experiences, and then also to move beyond that into the creative process of processing their experiences through the art form of dance. And so basically, Katrina Cranes is the result of a process where the students wrote about their experiences, drew, and then choreographed a dance about those same experiences. And that all happened at a studio in the woods. It's one of the pieces in my life that I feel really had some real impact. I really appreciate, again, the ability to be able to rework that piece and show how far the students have come since then. The title of the piece, Katrina Cranes, basically comes from my paralleling the two events in history, both Hurricane Katrina and the dropping of the atomic bomb in Japan. So the students went through a process of learning about the history of that event in Japan and paralleling it to experiences in Katrina.
As a former resident artist at a studio in the woods, can you tell us how the experience helped in your development as an artist?
I felt so appreciative to be able to be in a space that was conducive to meditation and to reflection and then ultimately creativity. So I really appreciate what the Carmichaels and everyone who works to make that space function for artists and the community.
And Aimee, I understand you currently have a call for artists?
Our residencies, I may have mentioned, are thematic. And right now we're in a 3-year cycle of residencies on the topic of water. And actually we have a current call to artists out. That deadline is May 17th. If there are artists in the audience, we encourage you to go to our website. You can get an application and you can apply.
Is a studio in the woods easy to find?
Yes, we are on the West Bank. We're downriver. We're past English Turn. So you have to go over two bridges if you're coming from the East Bank. You come over to the West Bank, and then you go down De Gaulle, and you cross over the Intercoastal Waterway Bridge, and you're in a really a different area of New Orleans. You're on this peninsula, which is kind of the last big bend of the river before it goes out into the Gulf. And you go down River Road, and you will find us. And we are in the city limits, believe it or not. Come explore this corner of New Orleans.
It sounds exciting. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with A Studio in the Woods Managing Director Aimee Rogan and dance artist Monique Moss. The family-friendly Forestival celebration of art and nature kicks off Saturday at 11 a.m. and runs until 5 p.m., rain or shine. The event is free. Donations are suggested. More info and directions are available on the web at astudiointhewoods.org. We have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Ivan Neville's Dumpster Funk and Mahalia will perform tomorrow at the Young Leadership Council's Wednesdays at the Square Concert Series in Lafayette Square. The downtown concerts are free beginning at 5 p.m. and running until 8 p.m. in the 600 block of Camp Street, rain or shine. The event features music, food, beverages, arts and crafts. The life and work of Clementine Hunter will be the subject of a discussion on Thursday at the Old U.S. Mint. Authors Art Shriver and Tom Whitehead will be featured. The program, which begins at 6 p.m., is free and open to the public. It's offered as part of the Second Thursday's lecture series. Southern Rep and Loyola are joining forces to host three new theater camps this summer for children ages 9 to 18. Students will get the opportunity to learn about auditions, acting technique, music, and dance. And each child who participates will be cast in a play. The camps will take place in the Lower Depths Theater, which is located in the Communications Music Complex on Loyola's main campus. For more info and registration deadlines, check the website southernrep.com. Click on Arts Education. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.